Did you just start recording?
No, I started recording a long time ago.
Oh, jeez. All of our rants and ravings are on tape?
Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Jorn Sutai Vampir and Jajim Vestai Jajim will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jajim.
And I am two of your hosts, Jorn.
Yes.
And Jorn.
Yes. And on this show, we are going to talk about the first of a two-book series called The Left Hand of Destiny, authored by J.G. Hertzler and Jeffrey Lang. And for those of you who don't know, and I can't imagine anybody wouldn't, J.G. Hertzler portrayed General and Chancellor Martok on Deep Space Nine.
He also played lots of other Klingons in lots of other places, but he's mostly known for playing Martok on DS9.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, J.G. Hertzler was an actor on the very first episode of Voyager.
If you can find the video or have the game Klingon, he plays the older Klingon in the game that has an important role to teach the main character that you're playing in that game.
Yeah. Well, you can find that on YouTube.
Right, the video of the gameplay.
Yes.
You just can't touch the objects on the wall and have them told to you what they are.
But yeah, there's a number of stars in that one. But anyway, would you like to tell us about this book a little, John?
Well, like you've already said, it's a two-part story about Chancellor Martok written by the actor, and it takes place right after the Dominion War. In fact, Martok is taking Worf, who's now the ambassador to the Klingon Empire from the Federation, back to Kronos on the Nekbar. The summary from the back of the book is the Klingon Empire is dying, and I think it deserves to die. With those words, Lieutenant Ezri Dax propelled Lieutenant Commander Worf to the most fateful decision of his life, to vanquish Klingon leader Gowron in honorable combat and install in his place a lowborn, one-eyed soldier of the Empire who might lead their people to the path of honor. Under the weighty mantle of the Chancellor, General Martok led the forces of the Empire to victory in the Allied assault against the Dominion. Now, with Worf at his side as newly appointed Federation ambassador to Kronos, Martok at last is coming home, bringing with him the hope of a bright new future for his people. But the new Chancellor's triumph to return to the Klingon homeworld is met by treachery and upheaval. As the demons of the General's past rise up, so too does a usurper to the Imperial throne, one who knows exactly how to crush Martok and all who stand with him, and who won't be satisfied until they are ashes under the foundation of a new Klingon Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I haven't read the second book yet. I'm still got to go through it. I'm just wondering, is the usurper going to spear Martok, and he's going to pull the spear more and more into him so he can kill the usurper?
Aha. Right.
Now, for those of you that don't understand the reference, the usurper, spoiler alert, turns out to be the bastard son of Martok, just like Mordred in Camelot.
Yes. And you pointed that out in the notes, and when I saw that, it was like, yeah, this is the King Arthur story.
Yep, because if you remember in the King Arthur story, Arthur was very, very down at one point because the Grail quest was failing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the point that Morgana and Mordred decided to try and take the crown from him, just like this story.
Yes. So, you know, that's a great parallel. So, listen up out there. There's an opportunity for somebody. If you could do Excalibur with a Klingon bent,
Jim, that would be huge. Jim, I'm stopping you, Jim. You got to do it this way. You got to do it Camelot in the original Klingon.
So you're proposing a musical?
No, not that Camelot.
Oh,
all
okay.
The other Camelots.
Here in Camelot.
And I'm not going to go into the Monty Python one either.
No. Let's. We don't want to go there. We'll wind up with a 5-hour show. All right. So, why don't we get into our overall impressions? I'll go ahead and go first on this one. This is a story full of despair and hopelessness. You know, I was very uncomfortable with Martok's deep self-doubt that he came out with during this story. We've not seen this kind of emotion from him in the past, either as the general or as the chancellor on the television series.
Actually, we have. If you go back to the episode where Worf actually does kill Gowron, the general was going, he's giving me all of these missions that I can't win. There's no way I can win, and I have to do my duty and go on these missions. I can't challenge him for this, for giving me these missions. I have to go do them. I'm in a no-win scenario. And Worf takes it on himself to resolve the issue.
Ah, yes.
Gowron's dead.
Yep. Well, Gowron had become...
political.
Yeah, he became political. He started out being a very good chancellor, and became way too political. But, you know, even at that point, we don't plumb the depths of self...
No, this goes much deeper.
Self-doubt.
In the story.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So, Gothmera, who is a character from Martok's past, has had a lot of time to think about how she would exact her revenge on Martok, who apparently... they had a little fling, and then he put her aside. You know, so we get the impression in the book that Morjod is, his motivation is to save the Empire from a weak leader. You know, he considers Martok to be a weak leader and actually under the control of the Federation.
And that should have been the dead giveaway that this was Camelot.
Yeah. And so Martok is going to get called to task for the foolishness of his youth is what's actually taking place here. It's not about Martok being a weak leader or the Federation being involved. It's about Martok and his indiscretion as a young man or as a young Klingon who didn't use good judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your overall impressions?
Same thing. Hopeless adventure. Hopefully it's going to lead to a more hopeful conclusion in part two. You are seeing hints of that in the end of the book when Martok is gleaming that the Klingon Empire has to change. And he sees ways that he can make the change if he can resolve the conflicts. Stories often have to take their main character from a place of comfort to where they lose enough to spur them into the action that the plot needs. It's a trope in just about any fiction.
Mm-hmm.
The main character has to lose everything to drive him to make the decision to change, as we're seeing here. And make that change work.
Yes.
So yeah, it's kind of a hopeless trope in this one, but it's just taken to a bit more of an extreme than we normally see in a lot of novels.
Yeah. Well, Martok has hit rock bottom, and he finds himself completely stripped of any of his self-confidence, and the only motivation that he seems to have through this book is going and saving his wife, Sirella, who has been captured by Gothmara. And so, yeah, he's not doing too well. I think the only thing that saves him, though, is the fact that he has people surrounding him, Worf, Alexander, Drex, and a Ferengi named Far, spelled P-H-A-R-H, Far, and
who's very un-Ferengi.
Oh, yeah.
He's being kicked out by his family.
Yeah, he's not going to be allowed back, but this small group of people keep holding Martok up. Now, how long are they going to be able to do that before they finally say, well, you know, Martok is not a leader? That was one of the questions that came up for me in the book.
It just, the amount of damage that these Morjahd and Gothmara are causing to the physical attributes of Kronos is kind of disturbing. I mean, they blow up the Great Hall. They take out the fleet that's bringing Martok back. I mean, destroy all the ships, including the, was it Vecnar or the Chancellor's ship, the biggie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, but what I thought was really disappointing was apparently this mother and son pair brought back the Herc, but the Herc were portrayed as a mindless beast, not the technology-wielding conquerors of the Klingon Empire.
Yeah. Now, were these the Herc that are referred to as the ones that were cast out before, giving rise to the Klingon Empire as we know it? Or were they called the Herc because of their role? Because my understanding is that the word Herc means invader.
I got the impression that somehow they were created, these beasts were created by the mother and daughter, mother and son pair. And it just, I don't know. It just, you don't know enough about them. They weren't in the story long enough to really get a feel for who or what they were.
Yeah, I more or less felt like they were kind of a plot device to chase people around and keep them on the move.
Whereas you could use soldiers working for Morjahd to do the same thing. You wouldn't need to throw the Herc in. Or you could have, what am I looking for? Genetically manipulated a hunted beast off Kronos that we're familiar with, or that has been mentioned somewhere else, to do the same thing. When you throw the word Herc around, I hate to say it, but you're expecting to see the guys that took over the Klingon Empire.
Yeah. And these are not beings. No, they're something completely different. So that's what I think we mean by the word Herc, as it literally translate as invader.
Yeah. That's too bad, because like I say, it's a wasted opportunity. It could have easily been, you know, they had genetically modified a Targ to be four times as big as a normal Targ and 10 times as aggressive.
Yeah, and take orders.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily do that. Just make the order. Kill.
Yeah.
Kill that. Kill that again. More killing of that. You know.
So we got a ship full of people returning to Kronos, and as soon as Martok arrives, kabloom goes the Great Hall. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Because they're immediately going to take out the chancellorship right afterwards.
Right.
It's surprising they didn't go ahead and take out the emperor's palace. See, to me, if you're going to try and take over the government, don't necessarily take out the seat of government, but take out the symbol of government.
Mm-hmm.
So you would take out the emperor's palace and save the Great Hall.
Yeah. No, we went the other direction. Yeah. So anyway, and speaking of Kalis, he's not around to be found right away. Takes a long time to figure out where he is.
Well, you haven't seen Kalis in Star Trek lore pretty much since he was installed as Emperor. To this point, I mean, where was he during the Dominion War? He should have put in some sort of an appearance on DS9 to rally the troops, or to rally the troops somewhere during the war.
Yeah, one would think.
I mean, I expect that he did, but it wouldn't have taken much for the people of Star Trek to actually just make a reference to it, drop a line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we don't even see that much. So, we move on, and we have Martok, his place, his residence, gets ransacked by Herc, and Sirella gets captured, and she's taken prisoner by Mojode and his mother, Gothmara.
The daughters are killed, the son sent into exile. Well, the son exiles himself. He just runs away.
Yeah, Drex, he takes off.
So that he doesn't really run away. He goes and hides so he can be useful later on.
Yeah. And we have Martok showing up in the Ketha province.
His hometown.
Yeah, a very poor place on Kronos. And now he's got to get back to the First City and fight his way back to be the leader. But as he goes through these trials and this journey that he has to make, he loses his self-confidence.
Well, if you stop and think about it, the thing that always got me is he's going to go back to First City and he's going to take power back. How? He right now is one man.
Yeah.
He's one man who starts out walking back to First City, walking back with a deadline in that they're going to kill Sirella in 2 days. And he needs a frickin' army, even though he was able to free Sirella by the end of the book with him, Worf, Drex, Farr, and a couple of others.
Yeah. And you know something else, though? Something I'd almost...
Sirella has to kick him in the gut to get him to do it.
Well, yeah. But there was something else going on here in this story, and somehow it seemed like Gothmara had some sort of mind control, something going on.
How else were the pair of them controlling all of the people in First City? That's what kind of bothered me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some sort of mind control was there.
Yeah, and it was mentioned as such, but we never really got, in this volume anyway, the reveal of what that was, because everybody was against Martok. As a matter of fact, Alexander had to go into hiding himself because he was recognized as Worf's son, and he became an enemy. He was everybody's enemy, and everybody was chasing him, trying to kill him. He ducked into a bar, which was a big mistake, because when he was recognized, he barely got away with his life.
So, yeah, lots of downers going on this one.
Yeah.
We're just driving everybody down to the point where that decision has to get made, and I think that decision was made at the end of this novel. So we'll see how John and Jeffrey resolve this in the next book.
Yeah. So it's a good half of a story that chops off, and it definitely ends on a cliffhanger with Martok being supported by Worf, Sirella, Drex comes back on the scene, the Ferengi Farr is there, and Kalis emerges also and gives Martok a talking to. Now, Kalis is all the way through the first half of this story, or, well, this book that we're talking about, but he's never referred to as Kalis until the very end. The rest of the time, he is a cloaked figure who is giving pep talks to various people.
And I forget who that is. Richard III or Richard V, or...
Yeah.
You know, from Shakespeare, the king that goes around in disguise and...
Oh, yeah, that was, Henry V, wasn't it?
Okay. No, I don't remember.
Once more.
I know one of the Shakespeare characters did that.
Yeah, same.
Because literally you've got Picard doing that in one of the Hollow Suites one time.
Yeah, the St. Crispin's Day speech, I think, is what you're referring to.
I was just wondering, and I'm surprised. I guess neither one of these writers are punsters.
Okay.
And they didn't have the Ferengi go to a train depot and point at it.
Okay, you lost me.
Far Point Station.
Ouch. Okay. Far Point at the station. Yes. So.
Now I've just lost your train of thought again, eh?
I'm not even sure where to go now.
Well, just don't go and have lunch, you know, choo-choo.
Yeah, really.
Well, the thing is, when you're dealing with hopelessness and you're just dealing with things that are going to be driving you down to get to somewhere, we're looking to see the majority of the plot appearing in the next book. The majority of the action has to take place there. Otherwise, what you're seeing is, well, let's blow up this building. And, how about that building over there? Bunch of followers over there. Hey, there's a cloaked ship up there. Let's get it.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense, because this book is slow. It is more thoughtful, and it is spending time, a lot of time, setting up what I assume is going to be taking place in the next book. We, you know, one of the first things we got to do is we have to expel the Herc from the planet once again.
Yeah.
We have to shut down whatever mind control is going on from Gothmera. And see, and I kind of ignore Morjod more or less, because he seems to be more of a figurehead. He's more of what Gothmera,
like Mordred.
Yeah. What Gothmera is using as a tool, and he is a tool, by the way, using as a tool.
It wasn't in the first part of the book.
No.
But as soon as Gothmera is introduced, you see that in the character.
Yeah, because she's also introduced as a mysterious figure behind him, telling him what to do.
Just like Morgana was telling Mordred.
Right. And we, yes, well, the parallels are all there. The other thing is, too, is as soon as Gothmera comes on the scene and reveals who she is and what she is doing, Morjod kind of takes a back seat, and we find out that he's not as strong a character as everybody thinks he is at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, at the beginning of the book, he's the guy who's organizing and doing and crippling the Klingon Empire. But, you know, later on, he's the wimpy kid who's, you know...
Yeah, he's
tied to mommy's coat strings.
Yeah, he's set up to be the Klingon savior of what it actually means to be Klingon, according to him. But you know, he turns out to be just a background character, taking credit for what has happened.
Now, putting this back into Star Trek terms, did we see the same thing with the Duras sisters? When they were propping up the bastard son of their brother?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what was his name?
Duras.
No, Duras, not...
I don't remember. It's been a while.
Yeah, the sun. It has been a while. So let's get into our favorite points of plot for this book. You go first this time.
It's hard to find a favorite point of plot with this guy. Everything is just, you know, falling apart, going downhill. Every time he turns around, Martok is running into something that's trying to take his chancellorship away from him. And we don't feel good about the character until he finally rescues Sirella and makes that decision to fight for his chancellorship, to build the new Klingon Empire that can go forward after it has been torn down by Gowron and his political maneuverings and decimated by the Dominion War. I guess that's why I'm looking forward to the next book, is there's probably going to be some more, there'll probably be some feel-good moments.
Yeah.
To it. And by feel-good moments, I kind of mean Klingon-type feel-good moments. Like
where the good guys win.
Beat the bad guy.
Yeah. The good guys win. I know what you're talking about. It is all in all a depressing book, the first part of this story. It's Martok has given up on himself. Those around him have to continually build him up and support him. And when it finally comes down to the end of the book and he does decide that he's going to go forward and be the chancellor, it's only at the urging of everybody else. And sometimes that is not enough to make a person want to do what they need to do.
I hate to say it, Jim. It's never enough to make a person do what they need to do. Because if you're doing it because you're being propped up, you're doing it for the will of others. You haven't reached reached down into your soul and found your motivation to move forward.
Yeah. Well, I think the last talking to Martok got from Kalis helped a lot in tipping Martok into, yeah, I can do this. I'm going to do this. You know.
Yep. That's why they were supposed to make him emperor, so that he can rally the people and give them the motivations that they need to be Klingons.
Yeah. But Martok seems, at this point, or before this point, he just seems to be very weak. A weak leader. And we know that's not the case.
I will say this, though. Reading the book, reading the lines of Martok, you can see J.G. Hursler's hand in writing this book. There are too many books out there that are written by an actor and another author where you don't know how much the actor's input was, if any. But in this case, you know, you can hear if Jeffrey's not, unless Jeffrey is really, really, really good at getting into the heads of characters, you can see JG's hand in it, because he had to speak the lines. He had to learn the lines. He had to learn the phrasing of Martok. And you can see that phrasing in the book.
Reading it so far, I would say these two guys probably collaborated very closely, and it is a 50-50 deal. I can imagine JG coming up with the story idea and carrying it forward, and Jeff Lang jumping in there, who is an excellent author also. I've read a number of his works, and they're all very good. But I would sure say that this was a collaboration and not just Jeff Lang ghostwriting.
Yeah.
Because you can't be J.G. Hertzler, as sharp and smart as that guy is, and not be creative as heck too.
Well, you could, but it'd take a lot of work.
Yeah. So we got a few themes to talk about.
Not really a whole lot. I mean,
not really.
Revenge,
but
against a negligent father.
Well,
Camelot.
Negligent father and negligent boyfriend. You know.
Yeah, I know. But like I say, Camelot.
Yeah. So you know, this was a fling, that Martok had with Gothmara, and she tells the story in the book that, you know, basically Martok used her and threw her aside. According to tradition, they should have taken the oath.
But that tradition had been changing. I mean, look at, can't think of her name now. Worf and Alexander's mother.
Kalar.
Okay. They had a fling, and she was not willing to take the oath.
Ah, but the one catch is she is not full Klingon. She's half human.
That's a catch.
Yeah. I mean, what if she were 100% Klingon? Would it have been different?
I think it would have been different or the same based on the educational upbringing of Kayla, not her breeding. She was raised more in the Federation terms. I think she was ambassador at the time, actually, wasn't she?
Yes.
So things were changing. Klingons were interacting with other species and picking up their values.
Yeah, but during Next Generation, depending on how many years, if Martok was a very young man, those changes probably would not have been as strong. Plus, Gothmara is a full Klingon, and she probably expected that Martok would take the oath with her.
Well, we can't know. We just have to go with the flow, I suppose. That's what happened. That's the way the two feel about it. That's why we have the conflict.
Well, yeah.
And then we have Sir Gawain. Oh, I'm sorry, Farr, the Ferengi.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I'm dropping more Camelot references in.
That's okay. Go right ahead. So, yeah, Farr, what an interesting character. You know, you see a Ferengi who is on Kronos running a business to extract, jewels?
From trash.
Gems? Yeah, gems from trash. That and he's very happy doing that. He's making a very good living, and his parents don't approve. His father does not approve, and basically says, "Fine, you do what you want to do. You're no longer a real Ferengi."
Well, the whole family was in the trash business. I think it was a matter of Farr was just not taking the business far enough, generating enough profits for the family to be proud of him.
Yeah. But he was making a decent living.
Yeah.
And Kalis talks to him and fires him up, and Farr turns out to be a very good ally for Martok.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I came up with a couple of themes. And
they didn't have the Green Knight.
No.
I never saw a Green Knight in there.
No, there was no Green Knight yet. We may or may not get one.
Oh, my God. Then they're really going to go heavy into Camelot.
Yeah. Unless we want to say the Herc would be the Green Knight.
Well, I don't know. The Green Knight pushed Sir Gawain to be a better knight.
Ah. Well, then we have Kalis, right? Pushing Martok to be a better leader.
Yeah, I suppose.
Could be. So I had a couple of themes that I thought we could talk a little bit about, and I think we already covered the foolishness of youth.
And we've beaten self-doubt over the head.
Well, yeah. We know how young men think, young males think, and what they think with, and it generally isn't the brains, their brains. It's a lot lower. So,
which brings up the question of, the Klingon Empire has been a technological empire, culture, longer than Earth has been a technological culture, and they haven't figured out birth control?
Well, I guess not.
I mean, let's face it, not only do we have this example, but again, we go back to DS9 and Worf, and you get Alexander. She's an important position, ambassador, and she's not practicing Klingon birth control?
Yeah.
Unless, of course, Klingon birth control is a Batleth.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to get into that realm. But yeah, they don't seem to be very considerate of that. So, yep, we wind up with someone who is going to threaten Martok's government, and right off the bat. So, and then, as you said, we talked self-doubt into the ground already. So why don't we just move into closing thoughts, and we'll get a lot more out of this, I think, when we go to record the second book.
Yeah. Well, in the back of the book, we've got a section on the authors talking about what they've done. And yeah, JG's section is a lot longer than Lang's section. But it does talk that while this is JG's first novel, he had been working on scripts that had been optioned but never produced. If you talk to writers, you'll find a lot of writers have had books that are optioned. They get a payment for their book. They get payment for a book so that it can be turned into a theatrical release of some sort, but a lot of it never happens. The example that comes to my mind is Joel Haldeman has had the Forever War optioned by a half dozen companies at least, but nobody has ever gotten around to producing it. Well, that gives JG some writing creds.
Mm-hmm.
That gives JG the understanding of speech patterns, of knowing how to talk, because, well, let's face it, scripts are mostly dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to know how to do it. So, you know, we talk about, in that section of the book, we talk about JG's writing creds and why, another reason why I think, yeah, he had a significant input into this book. Also, Gothamora has had a long time to plan, prepare her revenge against Martok in this story. She uses Morjold, I've got to stop throwing in the Camelot names. an unknown Klingon to begin to tear Martok down bit by bit. Well, building by building, maybe be a better way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Taking everything important away from him. His wife, his kids, his chancellorship, his ships, you know, demoralizing him to the point where he deems himself unworthy to continue to lead. He gets motivation to rescue his wife. He gets motivation to rescue his chancellorship. Oh, his only motivation to keep going is rescuing his wife, Cirilla. He does that. And then he gets the motivation to rescue his chancellorship and rescue the Klingon Empire. And JG gets the motivation to write the second book.
Yes.
Next time, everyone.
Yeah. Again, JG with the assistance of Jeffrey Lang. They are co-authors in this. And so we look forward to seeing what the resolution of this is. I've never read these books before. I don't know if you had or not.
I had to buy the books to go ahead and read them for this review.
Ah.
$21 for the first book in paperback?
Well, yeah, I guess.
And the second book is under $5?
Yeah, that seems kind of strange, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You'd think that they would charge $5 for the first one and then sock you $21 for the second one to find out what happens.
You know, in the Honorverse, there was a time when Bane Books was selling brand new copies of the first book in that series for 99 cents.
No, is that Honor Harrington?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now you're the
second. Just to get people hooked on her.
You're the second person that's mentioned that to me, so I don't know.
About a year later, it was $1.99. Yeah, they keep trying to. They've done everything but here. The first one is free. Come back when you want the next.
I may have to read one or two of those. So, as John said, we're going to be reading next month The Left Hand of Destiny, Book 2 by J.G. Hertzler and Jeffrey Lang. Since you're already listening to this, we assume you know how to find us, but what you need to do is get out there and spread the word about Bound by Honor. put it on Facebook, put it on Twitter, put it on Pinterest, put it everywhere you can think to put on. Go out and tell people you know, people you don't know, people you like, people you hate. Tell them about our podcast and get them to listen.
Put on a white dress shirt, black tie. Go door to door. Have you heard the words of Kalis? Preach the podcast.
There you go. So, for Bound by Honor, I am Jim.
And I am Jorn.
And join us next time for our next review. Kapla. You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group book review podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!